हरि ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 75, Adhikarana 2, no, Adhyaya 2, Adhikarana 1, the Vedas are the highest pramana. Prakarana, context, is the mutual expectancy of two complementary statements. For example, from the Taittiriya Samhiti 2611 and 2254, we can consider the two statements, Samidho Yajati, one worships with the kindling sticks, and Darsha Purnama, Purna Masabhyam Swarga Kamo Yajeta. One who wants to achieve heaven should worship by the Darsha Purna Masa sacrifices. The first sentence leaves unanswered the question, worship for what purpose? The second leaves unanswered the question, worship by what means? By Prakarana Pramana allows the meaning of the sentences to be combined. When both Prakarana and Astrotana Pramana are available, however, Prakarana is overruled. Right? So in other words, if you have a statement that gives both at once, you would take that rather than one statement here and one statement there that are connected. Does that make sense? That's all. Because in other words, it's more direct. Because we're giving the order of preference, of what's a stronger. Because it's always, when you have a hierarchy, you have to know what is, how that works. Just like in respect. You have to know what's at the top, what's next, what's next, what's next. And then, because at some times you're going to meet them all at once. Or some combination, so you have to know. Because all of these are praman, but you have to know if there's two of them, which one is takes prominence. Right? Because as we said, there's the seemingly contradictory statements. That's only because the secondary aspects are different. The primary is the same, to worship the Supreme Lord. The secondary may be through various means and everything like that. So to avoid that, then you also have to understand the importance or the weight of each authority or evidence. In the absence of stronger pramana, the context of statements may be determined by sthana, their proximity. Either their proximity in the text in which they occur, or else the proximity of the rituals they describe in the order of a sacrifice. Sthana, however, may be overruled by prakarana. For example, the complex Rajasuya sacrifice includes a ritual for anointing the king. In texts that set forth the Rajasuya yagya, there are two statements, both located near the sections describing the abhishek, anointing. Akshir and the Akshire Divyati, he plays dice. And Rajanyam Janati, he defeats kings. By Sthana Pramana, these two statements might be thought to belong to the abhishek ritual. But according to Prakarana Pramana, they belong not to the abhishek, but to the bigger context of the whole sacrifice. Does that make sense? Sthana means they're next to each other, but they're not actually dealing with that. Just like, let's say, the standard thing we come across in Vedanta Sutra, that they're quoting from Chandogya Upanishad or one of these other Upanishads. So, in the Upanishad, it's made some point about the Supreme Lord and how he's created everything, the source of everything, and like that. Then, at a later point, in that same run of verses, then it will mention about how he is non-different from everything. Then, a little bit further, then it will make a statement about, you know, his supreme will and how he does everything and how he's independent and how he is... He is there, you know, he is original and everything like this, right? So, by Prakarana, you know that that first statement and the last statement, they're talking about his personal thing. Yeah. So, therefore, the middle one, even though it's different, is not, it doesn't take weight.
Yeah.
Right? But that's what the Mayavadis are doing, and the others, they're taking it out of context. Right? Because here's, the whole point is about the context. They're taking things out of context and trying to connect it with something else that it's not actually connected to. Is that... Yeah.
Huh. In all this pramana, we are discussing only about shabdana.
Yes, we're dealing with shastra. Yeah, because we've established that a shabda, because otherwise this... is, you know, if we go by Prakarana, then, you know, by some people's minds, you'll make no connection at all between anything.
Yes.
Right, yeah. Yes. The last and the weakest of the six pramanas is samakya, right? Because it mentioned where it was saying before about the six. Or that's before that. It's actually before. He's Jiva Goswami's made the point. Okay, literal, interpretive, altering the syntax, referring to the other text, philosophical stance, and etymological meaning. But here he doesn't give the Sanskrit's, you don't
see. That's because what's itself is the Sanskrit.
Larger statements. Yoga, Lakshana. 72. It just says about the Tatparya and that. This seems to be some other aspect on strength of statements. Yeah, I mean, okay. Shuti Shabeksha Lingam, Kardano Shatra. Stanam, Kramo, Yoga. Samyaka on 73. Okay. The last and weakest of the six pramanas is samakya, which means the etymological meaning of the words. It's probably good if these Sanskrit words, because they're being used through here for the explanation, that's brought out before when we mentioned the, like it mentions the six, but it just gives the English. It doesn't say the Sanskrit. You know what I'm saying? On the what is that? Page 73. It says literal meaning, interpretive meaning, alternate. This is, you know, Jiva Goswami's mentioning. But if in there we put in brackets the Sanskrit, then we'll start to connect here, right? A little bit easier.
We need to connect.
Yes, we need to connect. The last and weakest of the six pramanas is samakya, which means the etymological meaning of words. In the description of hotri chamasa, a cup for drinking soma, there is no indication of whose cup it is. But the word hotri chamasa is a compound derived from hotri, Rigveda priest, and chamasa, soma cup. So samakya pramana allows the presumption that it is the hota's cup. It's called that, you know, but... It has these other elements, but it's going from the root. Samakya pramana, however, may be overruled by stana. In the description of a particular sacrifice, there is a section that begins with the heading Pauro Dasika, about the rice cake offering. This section mentions several utensils called the Samnaya vessels. Samakya pramana would use this information to determine that the utensils are made for general use in offering the purodasa. The purodasa is the cake, the rice cake. But this section also describes a secondary ritual, one for preparing an offering of milk. Right? Because you actually cook the sweet rice or the offerings and the cakes on the fire. You make the fire for the yajna. And then you prepare all the ingredients that will be involved there that require cooking.
Yes.
Right? So that's the thing, is it's going on about the one thing, but then you also have to prepare stuff.
Yes.
So it'll be going in and out of these different. That's why it's designed that you need a guru.
Yes.
Because it was so exactly clear, who would bother with the guru?
Yes.
But once you hear from guru, then it becomes very clear.
Yes.
Right? Because that's just Krishna's system. Right? If you approach it yourself, you won't understand. You approach guru, then you'll understand.
Yes.
That's just the system.
Yes.
Right? Sthana Pramana, therefore, overrules the judgment of Samakya, because these vegetables are mentioned within the specific description of offering milk. Right? So you might take it that because of the etymology, it's using the same, yeah, here, Purodha Sika, about the sweet cake offering. So you're going to take it that it's about the rice cakes, right? But the problem is the Samanaya vessels, they're doing something else at this point. So you may take them at the general or something this and that, but he's taking, no, it's specifically doing one thing. And whether they're connected or not, that's not important for the discussion here.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? That etymologically something might be connected,
yes.
But in its usage it might not be.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So that's why if all there is the etymology, then you might say, okay, this is used by, like it says, the cup.
Yes.
Since it says Hotri Chamasa, then the Hotri would be using it.
Yes.
Like that. But if there was some other evidence, you wouldn't use that.
Mm.
Like that? Because it might be it's the Hotri's cup, but someone else uses it. Just like the Hotri is there, there's the Advaryu. He sets things up. Once he has I think three assistants. Everybody has three assistants. So when he sets it up, he has his assistants. But once he finishes setting up and the yajna starts, his assistants then assist the Hotri.
Yes.
Right? But they're still his assistants, but they're assisting the Hotri. Right? So then if there's something connected there, it might have the name of him or the name of the other, like
yes.
this,
yes.
But it's not used by them.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. The etymological is useful if there is no other pramana. Because otherwise an application, then, because you have relationships of things and how they're used and all that. So it doesn't necessarily stay just within the etymological, the mathematical.
Right?
Riti. Jiva Goswami concludes this analysis of the present Anucheda by restating its original thesis. In regards to the inconceivable, it is explained that it is not subject to logic. Achintya kalu ye bhava na tams tarkena yojayet. That which is inconceivable is not subject to logic. Skanda Purana. One could then say, quote, if it is not inconceivable, then there is opportunity for using logic. Right? It means if it's something that we could conceive of, then we could use logic. Right? But that is not my inclination. In all circumstances, the Vedas are the proof, right? Because the problem is we'll say, oh, I can understand everything. Right? So, you know, that's the common thing. Especially the more intelligent you are, especially if you have a way of practically applying that, then you start thinking, I can understand and I know everything. That's just the way it works. So then you won't find anything that's not inconceivable. And so therefore then you will feel that my logic is evidence for everything. Yes, it's perfect. Yes.
Maharaj, there is no guidance from the parents. It's confusing.
Yes. That's why you see is that those who surrender the parampara, like that, who then they have a proper understanding. And those that don't, even though they're very intelligent and may come in their own lines, like you're coming down from Jaimini. Yeah, but where does Jaimini's philosophy come from? It comes from him. He may have a guru that's bona fide. Yes. But he's made his own philosophy.
Yes.
Right? So we don't say that Jaimini's philosophy is coming from Vyas. We're saying it's coming from Jaimini. Does that make sense? So that's important too. So that's the thing, is they use their intelligence, their logic, and then it seems, okay, if I want to enjoy, and if I do pious activities, then I get facility I enjoy, right? Because enjoyment's according to how much nice material facility I have, right? The situations, my abilities, and all that, right? Then good situations, I'll enjoy. So enjoyment comes from good situations. Good situations come from good karma. Good karma comes from good work. So now, if I use my, razor sharp intelligence here, then I'm going to come up with a point. If I always do pious work, I will always enjoy. Right? Since the soul is eternal. Right, that I do all this good work, when this life ends, that karma goes through to next life, I'll continue there, and it's like this way eternally I will enjoy. And this way he comes up with his philosophy. But yeah, he's not catching the full nature of things. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the problem, is they'll think that their logic, that means they can conceive of it. I remember once we were doing these complicated kind of things like that. And because the time when we were working on it, we were only dealing with the younger kids. But actually the curriculum we're doing now, we would say this is adult curriculum. Right? But the same classes are being done by the boys. Right? So now, if it's an adult class, people think it's very mature. If you say, oh, the kids are studying this, then, oh, it must be very simple for kids.
Yeah.
You understand? Yeah, but it's the same. Like Sanskrit grammar, it doesn't matter if you're 30 years old or you're 5 years old. It's the same grammar. It doesn't change. Right? You know, so therefore then, we had one educator. You know, or in this capacity, more of an academic, they wanted to see our work. And I said, well, it's not finished, so, you know, there's some gaps and all that, and this and that, so it would have to be explained how it's working. And their comment was, no, because we're trained, we're a PhD. How can we not understand, you know, it's basically, we'll automatically understand it. We'll just look at it and understand it, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, without it, you know, so what's the problem?
Yes.
So this is my point. Though it's an area that they don't even work in, right? Because in the modern academy, you have a degree in Indology. You can't say that I'm intelligent, I'll understand physics. Or I'll understand IT. No. You have it in that, and in Indology, the area of your thesis, that's all you are an authority for. One syllable outside of that, you're not accepted as an authority at all by any academic on the planet. But the point is because one's intelligent to be in that position, then one feels, I can know anything by my intelligence. That's the difficulty. So this isn't just a modern problem or a Vedic problem. It's just a material problem. Anyone with brains thinks, I know everything. Right? That's the thing. You know, it's just like you have some political clout. Right? So then they think I can take over the world. And who's done it? Right? Alexander tried, you know, the Romans tried, like that, you know, how you say Genghis Jeep tried. You know, they all tried. The French tried. I even heard that one time the Polish even took over Europe at one point. I don't know for how long, but it wasn't so long. You know, they take over, Russians take over, America. Everybody tries to take over, right? That's what's mentioned in the Bhumi Gita. Everybody tries because they have a little bit of prowess. They think, I have enough to rule the world. So in the same way, you have a little intelligence, you think, I can understand anything. So it's just the standard material, it's the standard issue material consciousness. So that's why then we don't do that, as Jiva Goswami says here. But that is not my inclination. If in all circumstances the Veda are the proof, right? Even if other things could be seen logically, you'll still use the Shastra for proof. Because otherwise, how do you connect things? Because then it moves into another area that you can't deal with your intelligence. You don't have that connection to Shastra.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if you only look at that time and that area, you won't know actually how it fits into the bigger picture. It is said in Shankara's Sharika, Agama Balena Brahma Vadi Karanadi Sarupa Nirupayati Navasyam Tasya Anumanasya Yatadrishtam Sarvam Abhyupagatam Mantavyam. The Brahmavadis define the nature of the ultimate cause on the strength of the scriptures. One should not conclude that everything seen should be understood according to inference. Commentary on Brahma Sutra 2238. So he's even pointing out there is the Brahmavadis still take scripture.
Yes.
Right? Then you apply anuman.
Yes.
The Veda is testimony beyond the material world. What is described as supreme in the Vedas will be inconceivable because it is beyond the material world. When examining the Vedas, what is indicated to be above everything else by the six types of statements, upakrama, etc., should become the object of worship. So, by all the six types of statements, you know, that are establishing authority in the Vedas, then that which then they all are indicating, that should be the object of worship. So they all, so that's his point, they all indicate Krishna. So that becomes the point.
Maharaj, if we deviate from the Vedas, we are in big problem.
Yes, we're in very big problem. Because then we're reliant on our senses.
Yes.
And those imperfections of the senses are there. You know, all the cheating propensity and all this.
Yes.
It's not that we have to remember, because we can say, no, but what about the mind and all this and that? But the problem comes up is that when we say cheating, does the sense cheat or does the mind cheat? Right? The illusion is the sense or the mind. Right? So when we say senses, we mean senses with mind. So that's the problem. If you deviate from the Veda, then you're left with all you have is your mind to work it out. Your mind, your intelligence. And that's limited. But Krishna is unlimited. He's perfect. Right? He's perfect and complete. Right? Well, we're part and parcel of the Lord, so we're not complete without Krishna. And only by being connected to Krishna, then it becomes perfect. Okay. So now, Adhyaya 2. Adhyaya 2, Adhikarana. Oh, I see, then 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. Okay. Pramana Pakarana. So within Adhyaya means the Pramana. Okay, still Pramana. We haven't gotten to Pramaya yet.
Yeah. Adhyaya 2, named Pramana Prakarana, and then within that, now we are doing Pramadikaran 2.
Okay, and then in Adhyaya 3, you get into Pramayas.
Yes, that is in the next book.
Okay, the next book. Okay. Okay, so Adhyaya 2, continued, right? Pramana Prakarana. Adhikarana 2, Puranas are Vedic. Adhikarana 3, Puranas are superior to the Vedas. Adhikarana 4, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost scripture. Because if Puranas are Vedic, Puranas are superior to the Vedas, then of the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam is the supreme. Right? Identifying and glorifying Bhagavatam. And Adhikarana 6, methodology of the Sundarbha. Adhikarana 2, Puranas are Vedic, Anuchedas 12 through 15. Adhikarana Prakashika. The Puranas, so this is still in. Okay, Adhikarana 2. Adhyaya 2, okay. Adhikarana Prakashika. The previous Adhikarana established the Shruti, Rig Yajur Samana Tarva, as the valid means of acquiring knowledge about the Supreme. Right, you're starting there because that's what people accept. And that's also the hierarchy of the basis, because it's coming from the Lord, but it's also the hierarchy of respect. So even though the Bhagavatam is superior, it's still the Vedas is considered, you know, respectable because of that. You know what I'm saying? It's just like Lord Chaitanya is there. He's the highest, but it doesn't mean that in dealing, his father's not respectable. Like that. So that's the thing, what you're having to deal with. Without guru, you won't understand. Because logically, you'll just say, oh, it all goes this way. So that's the...
So by logically, we said that Bhagavatam is the main book, no need to go to...
No, if you understand Bhagavatam, you already have the purpose of the Veda. Because we saw before the other day, you know, it was reading one of the verses from the Veda. You know, it means we've heard the verses from a Veda and Upanishads. But here we were hearing from Samhitas and Brahmanas. And everyone thought it was funny. You know, like that. So that's the difficulty. Is that you won't necessarily understand and how it's working and what it's dealing with and all that, because it does deal, you know, as technically it was dealing with the rituals, that's what it deals with. Like that. So you won't catch. Okay. The previous Adhikaran established the Shruti, Rig Yajur Samana Tarva, as the valid means of acquiring knowledge about the Supreme. The Adhikaran establishes the authenticity of the Puranas. This Adhikaran establishes the authenticity of the Puranas. In this particular Adhikarana, Srila Jiva Goswami first explains the problem faced by people of Kali Yuga to access the Vedas. In his commentary to Anucheta 12, Jiva Goswami insists that the Vedas in Kali Yuga are dushpara, difficult to fully understand, because of various interpretations and also due to unavailability of the complete text. Right? Because the text include, when we say the Veda, we mean all the aspects of the Veda. The Samhita is there. It's not that the Samhita itself is not there, but we see is that you have to apply that Samhita. That's in the Brahmanas. Right? And so then in these Brahmanas, then the various shakas that come down from that, the various lines, there are hundreds and hundreds of lines. And now there's only a few left. Like we say, Samaveda has 1,000 shakas. But there's only 3 functioning at present. So that means 997 aren't functioning. So that means all those fine points that are there in the Veda, like you can see, is they're just talking about the cup. Now there'll be something in some shaka in one verse somewhere that it makes some point. And because of that, everybody else then follows. You understand? So, I think Jiva Goswami will say 6%. 6% is all that's left of the Veda itself. The Samhita is there, fully there. But it's talking about all those other, because the Veda has 4 aspects. 4 features. The Samhita itself, which is the verse of the, when we say Rig Yajra Samanatar, we mean that's that. But it also has the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads. So there's hundreds of Upanishads, but basically there's, you know, 10 main ones are known. Others than that, different lines have different ones. Like that. The Aranyakas, I don't know how many are there in that. The Brahmanas, then we know then there's hundreds and hundreds of aspects. So a few are like Satapatta Brahmana, a few like this are famous. Does that make sense? So that's the problem, unavailability of the complete text. Because you don't have all those that are going to give some detail. Hence, he proposes that Itihasas and Puranas are the solution because they are easy to comprehend. Right? Instead of being Dushpara. By describing the Purana as that which make the Veda complete, he emphasizes the importance of Itihasas and Puranas to understand the absolute truth. After this, he addresses various doubts concerning the authenticity of the Puranas. But, because those details are giving you something, but it's about the Supreme. Right? So the Puranas are a show about the Supreme. Those details are there in the Veda. But to know the Supreme, you don't need those details. You know, if it's been clearly given by the Acharyas, right? First, it gives quotes from the Vedas to authenticate the Itihasas and Puranas as the fifth Veda. Then he mainly addresses the misconception that, quote, when Shruti texts enjoin that one recite the Itihasas and Purana, they refer not to that text which are later discussed by sages, but to certain passages of the original Vedas.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Smartos. Yes. End quote. Srila Jiva Goswami replies to this by confirming that all the Vedic literature from the Rig Veda to the Puranas is essentially a single conception. Only because the languages of the Shruti and Smriti are different are the texts designated separately, right? Because the Shruti uses Vedic Sanskrit and the Smriti uses classical Sanskrit. Right? He elaborates on this topic in the next Anuchedas as well. In Anucheta 13, he proves the fact that Puranas and Itihasas are the fifth Veda by giving unequivocal quotations from Upanishads and Puranas. This not only establishes Puranas as equivalent to the Shruti, but also clears the misconception that, quote, the word Purana cited in the Vedas are certain passages of the original Vedas, not separate texts, end quote. In the Anuchedas 14 and 15, Srila Jiva proves how Puranas have the same divine origin as the Vedas, and also establishes them as highest among all the Smritis. Right, of all the Smritis, and the Puranas are the highest. That's why you see the things like Ayurveda and all these others, they're Upa Puranas.
Yes, yes.
Means generally we know them as Upa Vedas. We'll generally describe, but technically they're Upa Puranas, because they're in line with the Puranas. So they're assistants to the Puranas.
What is a Vedanga?
Vedanga, then you have six. They basically mean the four aspects of Sanskrit. Then you have rituals. And then you have astrology. Those are Vedanga. So in the Sanskrit, then you have how it's pronounced. Right? Because when words go together and all that. In let's say, in contemporary language, there's no, generally not so much of a rule like that. If they grammatically put them together, then there may be some rule. If they're declined, then there'll be some rules.
Mm-hmm.
But now let's say you have two words following each other. The word has been declined according to the grammar, followed by another word declined according to grammar. But we'll keep them as the two, they won't have any influence on each other.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that when you pronounce it, then there'll be adjustment. You know, it's just like when you have the letters ta-ta-da-da-na, right? Where ta's are, you can say does. Or where does are, you can say ta's. You know, ka-cha, these. So then you get what is known as slang. Right? So in other words, when the words come together, the people that say it easier shorten it or do different things. They combine it, they change the letter. And so that inherently, and then with time, that goes, people don't understand that. That becomes the thing, and then they do it again and again. So therefore you have the modern language, the middle language, the old language. You know, it just keeps like that. But in Sanskrit, slang is already worked in. When this letter follows this, it changes. You know, one of them adjusts so that you can say it easily. So it maintains, but as soon as you split them, like you'll see in the shloka, the words are in one form, but many times in the word for word, when Prabhupada gives it, they're in a different form.
Yes,
that's because in the word for word, they're in their own form as they stand themselves.
Yes.
But when you put it in the shloka, then by Sunday and what was the area? You have, they say, grammar, you have Vyakaran, Nirukta, Chanda, Siksha. By the Siksha, the rules of that, then they combine in a way that you can comfortably pronounce them. So Sanskrit, the things that you would do to it to make it slang are already worked in for the grammar. So it's official.
Yes.
Like that. Does that make sense? That's
There is no need to change.
There's no need to change. So that's why Sanskrit is still the same now as it was thousands of years ago. But in modern languages, just give it a couple of hundred years, it's changed so much. You know? Like if you go back, the language that they would speak, you know, like say 150, 200 years ago, like in English, it would be hard to understand. And if you go back 300-400 years, you won't understand it at all. Even though it's the same language. You know, people adjust like this, and also it's how the vowels are pronounced. Because when something comes together, the vowels might combine. Does that make sense? Well, nowadays, just people do it. They just change the things, and then you don't know what the words are.
How the written English and the spoken English is entirely different.
Yeah, that's a whole different topic. Yes. Yes, so it's written. Well, in Sanskrit, how it's written is exactly how it's pronounced. Yeah. Yeah, English doesn't have that.
In case of the statement, when there is a contradiction between Smriti and Shruti, Shruti is spoken higher priority.
Yes.
So how can you understand that? Puranas and
because the Puranas don't contradict the Veda. They actually explain it. Does that make sense? Now, the Veda is talking about that purodasa, that rice cake being offered like that, and the Purana says that all offerings should be made to the Supreme Lord. So how do those contradict? But in the one, it doesn't specifically say there about the Supreme Lord, the Purana does. Not that the Veda won't say that at some point, but you may not connect it all the way through. Does that make sense? Yes. Anucheta 12. Wow.
It's a big one.
Impressive. Okay, so that's why it's an anucheta, right? Instead of a verse.
And actually, this is not so. Maharaj first states the whole thing, then he defines little by little.
Okay.
So that he can translate. Otherwise, it's like a very big one. Okay. Now onwards, it becomes very big.
Oh, you mean, so this is not all of it?
For this, it is all of it. For the next one, it is not even up to which I kept here.
Okay. Since the words of the Vedas are now difficult to access and difficult to understand, and since the sages who explain the text mutually disagree on the meaning, the words of Itihasas and Puranas, which explain the meaning of the Vedas, and which are another form of the Vedas, should be discussed. Those statements in the Vedas which cannot be understood can be inferred by seeing the Puranas and Itihasas. That fact establishes these scriptures as proof in the Kali Yuga. Itihasa Puranabhyam Vedam Samu Pam Pab Brim Hyate Prim Hyahayet. One should clarify the meaning of the Vedas by the Itihasas and Puranas from Mahabharata 1.1, 1.62.67. It is also said that a Purana is so called because it completes Purana, the meaning of the Vedas. It is not possible to complete the Vedas with something which is not equal to the Vedas. It is not possible to complete a gold bracelet with a piece of lead. If the word Veda means Puranas and Itihasas, then one should look for other works to be called Puranas. If one does not do so, the Itihasas and Puranas would simply be the Vedas. Right? Because that was that point that some will say is that, oh no, but when you say Itihasas and Puranas, they're talking about, you know, parts of the Veda. But then if it says that this completes, then one should look for other works to be called Puranas. Otherwise, then why would it say Puranas and just say Vedas? Though there is non-difference because they are all beyond human production, apaurusheya, with words indicating one meaning, there is also difference. Since the Vedas have intonation, of the words, swaras and puranas do not. The Madhyandina Shruti indicates that the Puranas and Itihasas are equal to the Vedas, since they are also non-human in origin like the Vedas. Okay. Just trying to make, as Jaimini says, you're trying to, where you say repetition means emphasis, so we're pointing out here that they are also, right? Okay. Evam va aresya mahato bhutasya nishvasitam etad yad rigvedo yajur veda sama vedor tarvangirasa itihasa puranam. The breathing of the Lord is the rig, yajur, samana, tarva vedas, the itihasas and the puranas. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 2.4.10. So here Upanishad, because they're considered Veda, they're Shruti, has said that these four are all part of it. I mean, these four and Itihas and Purana. Yes, yes. So they all come from the breathing of the Lord. And as said before, as he says, no, but sages spoke them. But sages are also speaking the Vedas. Yes. So that means that Krishna arranges that he is given the Veda, and as they are, then these different sages in that, they will speak it according to how he's given it.
Yes. Okay. Quotations, they're also part of the original Anucheda. Maharaj just...
Oh, I see. He broke it up. It was, so it's one thing with one translation. Okay. Okay, so Anucheda Prakashika. In the previous Anucheda, Srila Jiva Goswami has established that the Shruti, Rig, Yajur, Samana, Tarva, constitute the valid means of acquiring knowledge about the Supreme. In this particular Anucheda, first, Srila Jiva Goswami explains the problem faced by people of Kali Yuga to access the Vedas. He points out the practical difficulties involved with studying them nowadays. The first difficulty is the unavailability of the complete text of the Vedas. The second is the dull brains of the people of Kali Yuga. Yes. And he was talking about then people who were smart. And that's in Kali Yuga.
This is in India
amongst the Brahmins, amongst the scholars, and still they can't figure it out. And they're dull brains. Yes, just like, what do you call it? I guess in Indian kind of tradition, they'll say dull brain, or slow, or in Bengali, mata mota,
yeah.
You know, fat head,
yeah.
Like that. But they still have a brain. But it, right? It's just not much. But in the West, then someone's not smart, you say he has no brains. Right? So
yes.
That's the difference.
Yes.
In his commentary to this Anucheda, Jiva Goswami insists that the Vedas in Kali Yuga are dushpada, difficult to fully understand. No one knows the Vedas completely because they are not even completely available for study. And even those parts that are available cannot be fully deciphered by the less intelligent scholars of modern times. So even if they are there, we don't have the intelligence to be able to understand this. Just like, let's say, how this grammar works. So how do you define what should be the swara of a word? There are so few people that know this today. It's like, you know, I think, you know, this, I don't know, you could, one, two, maybe three maximum, like in the whole of, you know, India, that know this. So if you have something you want done, you have to go specifically to them to look at it. And even them, they generally know their area. So if it's from an area that's not theirs, then they, you know, let's say they know Rig Veda, so they don't know, you know, Sama or something like that. So that's the difficulty. So he proposes that Itihasas and Puranas are the solution because they are easy to comprehend. By explaining the Purana as that which make the Veda complete, he emphasizes the importance of Puranas and Itihasas to understand the absolute truth. After this, he gives quotes from the Vedas to authenticate the Puranas and Itihasas as the fifth Veda. Sarva Samvadini. Though proof has been defined, another doubt arises, and the inclusion is shown in this section. The Vedas are difficult to access in Kali Yuga. They are difficult to understand because they are not widely used at this time. Riti, the problem with Shruti is twofold. One, fragmentary remains. Shruti, what has been heard, end quote, refers to eternal revealed scripture revealed by rishis in meditation and passed down orally through unbroken lines of teachers and disciples. Originally, the Veda was one, and at the advent of the current age, Kali Yuga, Srila Vyasa divided it into four. Vya dadhad yagya san tatyayin yaim veda ekam chatur vidham. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.19. When Vyasa's followers further divided the Vedas into 1,130 branches. Formerly, the Rig Veda was divided into 21 branches. The Yajurveda into 100 branches, the Samaveda into 1,000 branches, and the Atharvaveda into 9 branches. Kurma Purana, Purva, 52:19-20. Each branch of each Veda contains 4 subsections. Samhitas, collections of hymns and incantations. Brahmanas, interpretations of rituals. Aranyakas, elucidations of esoterics, you know, like all the metaphysical and all those. It means you have the one, the Brahmanas show what is the ritual, how to do it. But you see there's a lot of metaphysical things. That's explained in the Aranyakas. Right? Because generally those who are performing the rituals, the Grihasthas, the main point is how to do the ritual and get that result. But for the for the Vanaprasthas, they look more at what's the actual esoteric purpose of it, so they can pull themselves back from that material desire.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then the sannyasis, then it's the Upanishads. Right?
And the Brahmacharis.
They study and memorize the Samhita. Right? Because they actually have a memory. So altogether, the Veda consists of 1,130 Samhitas, 1,130 Brahmanas, 1,130 Aranyakas, and 1,130 Upanishads. Oh, okay, so there's one of each. Okay, a total of 4,520 titles. By the influence of time, however, many texts have been lost. At present, only about 11 Samhitas, 18 Brahmanas, 7 Aranyakas, and 220 Upanishads are available. This constitutes less than 6% of the original Vedas. Okay. So, like that. See, because what you have is you have the aspect of how you pronounce, because the Shaka has a particular way it pronounces. So, in pronunciation, you have varieties or alternatives. You can say something or not. Just like at the end of the line, means you have a short vowel be aha, a long one to be aha, right? But if it's at the end of the shloka, you can say a short one as long. So some will do that, some won't. You know what I'm saying? So like this, there's so many, in this way then you'll get it and then you'll have so many alternatives. So some will have the most because it uses 9 notes. The other ones only use 3. So you see there's less variation.
Like we see in the Kama Gayatri Mantra, how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he couldn't find out how it is 24 and off syllables. And finally in his meditation, Radharani reveals, because Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes it's 24 and half. But according to the Sanskrit which he knew at the
24
time,
and half or 23 and half?
24 and half.
Oh well, but the point is about the half.
Yes, okay. Yes. So how it is at the half, because it is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he quoted, so though Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is considered as the scholar in Sanskrit at that time, still he has the faith in the previous Acharya. So he's feeling very bad that I don't know how it is. Finally, Radharani herself has to reveal it to
him. Reveal, okay, yes. Yes, because you have things just like that. Let's say sometimes you see like D and DH.
Yes.
DDH.
Yes.
So means that in pronunciation, that's one syllable. And let's say it's followed by a short, so it'll be counted as, a short mantra. So that's one. right? So DDH in a short A, right? But that D, that first D, it takes on half a matra. So you say adha.
Yes.
You wouldn't say just you would so it becomes one and a half. Like that. Does that make sense? Stuff like that. Or let's say that one, if that before means, and that's only if that syllable before is short. If the syllable is long, you don't do that.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So there's all these rules like that. Yes.
In that particular case, it is ya is followed by v, then ya becomes half.
Ya becomes half. Okay. If ya is followed by okay. Okay, so that's where it goes short.
What we have.
So that's why I would think 23 and a half, because Gayatri is 24.
Oh,
so then that means you'd have 8, 7 and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yes. When we say we have river Samhita within Brahmana Raja, it means.
Please, there's four, so Rig Veda Sama Yajur, like that. But within that, there might be, if he says, how many do you say here? 11 samhitas. So there might be, you know, three of Rig, you know, two of this, one of that, like this.
But this means we have this text, we kept that text. How it was possible to keep that original text?
Because they were all done by speaking.
But they keep in writing?
No, they didn't need to. That's the problem. When you write it down, that's when you lose it.
Yes.
Because then you can't carry it with you.
Yes.
Right? So that's the point. That's why also all these things, even though everything's lost now, then it'll be revealed again. Because in the higher planets, it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
And these sages, in what, you know, the next day of Brahma, then they're speaking again. You know, so it's that's the thing, is aparusheya. It's not spoken by any person. It comes from the Lord. So when the Lord wants it to be there, it's there. So it's not lost.
And also, by the time this was written, it's 16th century,
right.
And Madhvacharya belongs to 12th century. In between those 400 years, only a lot of things are lost. Like what we quote of Charvaka Muni philosophy, it's of Madhvacharya's library. There is nobody from later on who can prove that this Charvaka philosophy existed.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, you see different categorizations and stuff. Sometimes you see the numberings are different. And that, so it just means there must be different recessions. So that's the thing.
So now all these texts, they are
written. Means whatever is there. He means that written down 11 samhitas, 18 brahmanas, 7 anikas, 220 upanishads are available. That's at his time.
Yes.
And then between that and now, then somebody got lost. It's just like, let's say a gentleman, you know, just say for example in Calcutta, you know, he's a bit scholarly. You know, it's kind of like his hobby. Like this, and so therefore, you know, he makes some effort to collect, you know, scriptures. So then in his, you know, he hears here and there in someone else's library, he gets a hold of it, and he goes to visit the holy places, and while he's there, he checks around what's available, some, you know, old temple, or somebody can't. So in other words, people that can't maintain stuff, then they give them to people who are willing to. But the point is it's how you say, the rule of law of diminishing returns. Because with time, there's less and less people want to take care.
Yes.
So then you have, let's say, this gentleman dies.
Yes.
Like that. Okay, now his sons, you know, they've gone to IIT. Just to say.
Yes.
Right? And so what do they care about these books? So now the house becomes his, and he's going to live there, and his wife is asking, why all this junk here? And he says, well, it's my father's library, and this and that. And so that carries on for some time until the boss wins. Then he has to get rid of it. Right? So they don't know what it is. A lot of it can be even written on the leaves and stuff like that. And so those really don't look nice. You know, and the other things, they're old. They could be hundreds of years old, or, you know, different things, and they're not necessarily fancily done. You know, because I remember once in Varanasi, we were there, we went into a bookshop, and we were asking about different things, and they came out with, in English, a complete translation of Ramanujacharya's commentary on Vedanta Sutra. You know, so this was done, you know, probably done like 100 years ago or so, not really the contemporary ones, old like that. But it was done on this, if you ever seen it, it's kind of like, it's kind of like the paper like they use in grade school,
yeah,
or in secondary school. It's really fat, thick, heavy. You know, the books are so heavy. It was that material. Because, you know, they didn't have these fine paper like we have now. And not only that, the edges weren't cut. They didn't use the guillotine to cut it. You know? You understand guillotine? Guillotine? Does that work for you? No? So it's just like that. And it cost me, I think I bought it for 5 rupees. Maybe it was 10. And it was one that they had sitting in the shop for, you know, probably the guy's father had gotten it. But, you know, who wants that one? So it just sat there. So that's the thing, is these things are printed. There's so many things that are printed and never printed again because it's not business. Like the Puranic Encyclopedia that I remember seeing in the 70s, that was common. You can't buy that now. It was only printed that once. And now you have other ones that are printed that are basically Devi Bhagavat. But the original one wasn't Devi Bhagavat. You know, so stuff like that. Somebody prints it and then it goes, so you have to... Does that make sense? So like that, it just gets lost. The guy throws it out or he gives it to someone else. Or that, you know, it's just like in Calcutta, that the Gita Bhavan there.
Yeah.
The library, Hari Sari Prabhu is putting together that library. He's got, you know, I don't know how much stuff. He's got a ridiculous amount of stuff. Now that he's known for having a library and established and that, and they go around and you put out the feelers. And like this, it's like this. I could throw this out or I could give it to these guys and get, you know, a few thousand rupees. So why wouldn't, and it means I have to throw it out. I got to go to work. You know, they'll pay me and take it away. He knows, hey, you know, it's kind of like, so like that. So it just gets lost because it's written. while previously it's heard, they won't forget. And then they tell their students and they tell them like this and then it goes on.
So it stops them. Those are not qualified to access to it.
That's true also. Then you have the next point here. That brings us to point number two. Because of point number two, that's why there's point number one. Yes, point number two, the fallen souls of the Iron Age. Sounds so much bigger, the Iron Age, than Kali Yuga, right? You know, In the present age, Kali Yuga, efforts to understand the Vedic text directly are almost sure to be frustrated. In Kali Yuga, truly qualified brahmanas are rare. Those who are brahmanas in name only or are otherwise unfit cannot understand the Shruti scriptures. There are simply too many Shruti texts for a less intelligent person to read through. What to speak of comprehend? Like we had one devotee here. The upstairs, that second floor, the whole thing is library. And then he was the librarian. He wouldn't let anyone into the library. You know, it's a library, it means, and it's the school library. I'm not talking about someone who's not from the school. Those from the school can't get in the library. Like that. And so then you call, no, but I have to look something up. It says, what do you want to look up? I want to look up this. Okay, then that means, you know, if that means that's in this, or this scripture. Which one do you want? I wanted that one. Okay. But in that one, then you mean this, you know, that. They go, okay, that. And which chapter? Okay. And which sect? Okay. Okay. And then he'll just tell you. Hence, you don't get in the library. Because you want to know something, you just ask him. He'll tell you. Exact. Because all he would do is 10, 12 hours a day read. That's all he did. He didn't do anything else. So, you know, where do you find people that can study and know? You know, it's just like in a country's history, amongst their intellectuals. You know, they may have one or two, you know, over hundreds and hundreds of years, they'll call it a walking encyclopedia. So before, the Brahmins were all walking encyclopedias. That was just standard.
And also, all those history of all the other countries together cannot match to only one Mahabharata.
Yes.
And then India had not just Mahabharata.
But they didn't even have that many people to kill. Then you also have the aspect of even if they are scholarly, it doesn't mean they understand the conclusion of the Vedas. Yes, so that's the whole thing, is they may know, they may memorize, they may know the secondary detail, but that's where it says that they don't get along. That's what Jiva Goswami made the first. People, they don't agree with each other because they only see the secondary, they don't see the primary. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you have someone who is a master cook in one cuisine and someone who's a master cook in another cuisine. They can sit and happily discuss for days menus and techniques and recipes and everything like that and never have any argument. Because they understand what they all do and what the effects are. And so someone's trying to get this or that and this or doing that. Oh, why would you use that there and not this? Oh, because you're getting this. Oh, okay, you know, like that. But you have someone who, you have two in the same cuisines who are expert. They probably won't even be able to look at each other, let alone talk. Because as soon as the one is doing this, oh, I wouldn't use that, we use this. So that's what you're dealing with. So masters can do, so how many masters are there? That we have so few scholars, let alone masters. Right? Is that... Yeah. Okay, there are simply too many Shruti texts for a less intelligent person to read through. What to speak of comprehend? The Vedic world of tens of thousands and millions of years ago was a different place, with educated people much more capable of understanding the subtle topics unfamiliar and unscrutable to us today. Moreover, today's extant commentaries on the Vedas, like Shayana's from the 14th century, are too recent to provide reliable insight into the original intentions of the texts. Right? So that's 14th century. So that means, you know, what is it? 800 years ago. And we'll say it's too recent. But because here, the original intentions. Now, he may be able to give very nicely a word and what it is and technically where it comes and etymology and all that. But as long as that's what you have, then it'll be good. But to get the real thing, then you have to turn to Bhagavatam. Right? To further complicate matters, in Kali Yuga, human memory has grown weaker. In former times, there were no books. Students were Shrutidhara. They could assimilate all knowledge from their gurus simply by hearing and remembering. But this is no longer possible. Right? Because there they could hear and remember. Then you have the problem where they may hear but not remember. And now you have the problem they don't even hear, right? Because they have, what is it? What's it? Attention deficiency syndrome or something like that. So they can't even hear, right? You know? Yeah.
Attention deficiency disorder.
Huh?
Attention deficiency disorder.
Disorder. ADD. Okay. ADD. But this is no longer possible. In this age, the food, air, water, and even the very ether are all polluted. Right? It's supposed to have space. And all these factors have taken their toll on human memory, making it difficult to study even the available 6% of the Vedic texts. What to speak of the entire four Vedas and their branches? Srila Jiva Goswami therefore concludes that although the four Vedas are perfect Shabda Pramana, in the present age it is impractical to study them thoroughly and thereby ascertain the absolute truth. Right? They'll still be the foundation of the absolute truth. But to study them to come to that understanding, that won't happen.
Yes.
So
Master, we said that only the Acharya, because they know the Vedas, they know the intent of the Vedas, can teach the Vedas.
Yes. That's why we hear from them. We don't care what others say. Yes. Means if what someone else says supports what they say and gives some technical detail, that's nice.
Yes.
But But on its own, we don't look to them for conclusion, for intent. Like it mentions some of these grammatical things. We can look to scholars and get grammatical information, but we won't look to them for the conclusion. Just like Shankara gives that very nice point that, you know, we only look to the Veda. The Brahma bodies just look to the Veda, but we don't look for the conclusion what they're looking for in the Veda. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhusha on the commentary. If Vedas are the pramana, then by the Vedas one should understand about the highest goal. This Anucheda replies to that statement. Purvapaksha, so the doubt. Though the meaning of the Vedas may be difficult, sages have explained the meaning by using Nyaya and other scriptures. Uttara, the explanations of the meanings of one sage contradict the explanations of other sages. You know, it's just like internet. Whatever you look up, you can find one thing, and you can look up and find people who say exact opposite. You know, someone's saying that, yes, this diet is the best thing, this happened, that happened, everything. Another guy said, I tried that diet and almost killed me, and this and that, and this and that. The doctor said, you know, so that's the problem. Whatever it says, someone else is saying the exact opposite. So that's not a new problem. It's just right. Yeah, you know, it's just what's heard in the air, the shabda, right? You know, so riti. As an alternative, someone may suggest that since only a few of the Vedas are available, and even they are difficult to understand, why not simply study the Vedanta Sutra, the definitive summary of the Vedic conclusions? To this, Jiva Goswami replies that various thinkers differ about the meaning of the Vedanta Sutra. And so this method will likely lead to confusion. The orthodox philosophical darshans each claim a Vedic connection, but except for Jaimini's Mimamsa philosophy and Dvaipaina's Vedanta, they all merely pay lip service to Apaurusheya Shabda Pramana in practice, probably need another comma there, ignoring it. Right, so in other words, Jaimini will accept all the sutras, but he'll interpret in his way, right? And then Dvaipaina, then it deals with all sutras. So therefore, anybody who's in Vedanta, they deal with all sutras, like the Vaishnava schools. Shankara, even he doesn't comment on every verse, like that. So like that. But all the other schools, they quote from the Veda, but only those portions that support what they do, and all the others, they just don't even deal with. Like you saw when push comes to shove with the atheistic Kapila, when there's some push on that, he switches over to Buddhism, like that. So that's the whole point, is that Karma Mimamsa minimizes the authority of the Upanishads and their approach to the absolute truth, right? Because it's all about karma. If you give it all up, then Gotama's Nyaya school and Kannada's Vaisheshika study only the logic and structure of the physical world. And in opposition to the Upanishads, the Shankya philosophy of the atheist Kapila and the yoga system of Patanjali consider material nature the prime cause of creation, and the soul, or God, only a passive witness. In general, the standard darshanas disagree with one another on major points of epistemology and ontology. And the existing commentaries on the ancient sutras of each of these schools are all younger than 2,000 years, far removed in time from the actual Vedic civilization. For all these reasons, we must admit that even with the help of the Vedas and Vedanta, we will not be able to understand Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana from the Veda and Vedanta, because that's what you're trying to understand. Because if you don't understand that, you're not understanding the Veda. Right? Scholars will think, no, I understand, because then it's all about the ritual. Like we said, there's that story given of Gotami? Gotama's daughter? Gotama Muni's daughter? Whatever, she was a scholar, but she knew Vedanta. So she was in a assembly It would have been a yagya that was being done put on by Janaka Raj. And so then at these assemblies, then so many sages come and they, you know, in between the rituals, they discuss scripture. So at one point then it came up, well, who's the most scholarly of all those present? Who's the senior most? So different sages started discussing until different people defeated each other until it was just down to Vishwamitra. And so then it didn't matter who was there of all those, you know, Brahmins who were there and what obscure part of the Veda that they quoted from, he knew it. He knew the detail. So in this way, he knew everything. There wasn't anything that whoever was there knew that he didn't know, and then he knew beyond that. But as we see here, it's all just technical stuff. So then, everyone having asked questions, and the king asked, so is there no one to ask anything more? Do we establish that Vishwamitra is the most qualified and knowledgeable? Mm-hmm. So then she stood up.
Gargi.
Huh?
Gargi.
Gargi, that's it. Oh, it's Garga. Okay, Gargi. Okay, it's something with a G, right? So it's got one letter like that. So Gargi. And so then she stood up, because in the Vedanta, I think Vedanta Sutra, she's quoted as being the Uttamadikari.
Yeah.
It gives example of Uttam, Madhyam, and Kanishtha. So she's giving an example of Uttam.
One of the wives of one of the sages. Okay.
Yeah, so it's, Ekayana, she's focused on the Lord. So then she started asking questions about transcendence. He didn't know anything. But it's kind of like asking a scholar on a subject, like let's say you go to the greatest scholar and everybody's accepting the scholar, and then you start to ask him questions on, you know, underwater basket weaving. And it's kind of like, what are you talking about? That subject matter doesn't even exist. So you're making this up. You're just doing this, and that. So when she understood, he didn't even know that spiritual existed, she stopped the conversation and just announced that he's the greatest sage. Right? So that's the point, is that you can be so great and not even know it's about Sambandhabhidaya and Prayojana. They'll apply those principles, but only on what is the ingredients required, who's qualified, what each ingredient does, then how you combine those ingredients and rituals and mantras and all that to get this particular result. You know, and that gives you that. You get the soma juice, that'll take you to the heavenly planet. That's all they know. They don't understand the transcendental position of this. So that's the whole point, is that without the acharyas, it won't be known. I mean, it just cannot be known. You can't know it by your intelligence. So that's why when the acharyas say something, we don't go against it. We go along with it. Okay. Then this is continuing with Baladev. Since what cannot be understood in the Vedas can be understood from the Puranas and Itihasas, the Itihasas and Puranas, which are forms of the Vedas, are established as proof. Itihas Purana Abhyam Vedam Samu Pabrim Hayet. One should clarify the meaning of the Vedas by the Itihasas and Puranas, right? Because you see it practically applied. It is called Purana because it completes the meaning of the Vedas, Puranat. One cannot complete a gold bracelet with a link of lead. So here also Purana, it means to complete. So if it's coming from the root, complete means Purna. Purna also is a name for the spiritual world. It's complete. So by the Puranas, you can understand the spiritual world. That's what completes it. Otherwise, people just get the ritual.
Purana also means old, no?
Yes. Yeah, because you have all the old history. So it's just history, so it means it's old. You know, like yesterday is already history. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.